Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway, brings you Conversation Radio here on Green 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, welcoming you to The Joan Kenley Show. We have a truly charming theme today, how storytellers weave stories, with two well-known tellers of tales, Gay Ducey and Sandra Noman. But just what is the art of storytelling anyway? First of all, it's one of our oldest art forms and a powerful means through which cultures pass down values from one generation to the next. We listen before we speak and speak before we read. This simple truism can translate into a dynamic model for learning in any part of our lives, no matter how old we are. You can enliven your own delivery and become a skilled storyteller by taking advantage of courses and conferences, and they're available throughout North America. You can look at the National Storytelling Network on the web at nsn.org. And now I'd like to welcome Sandra Noman and Gay Ducey. Sandra's a teacher, writer, grandmother, and lively teller of tales. She's currently directing a program serving the needs of homeless middle school children in San Francisco. Born in East Africa to medical missionaries, she's lived in many lands, gathering stories everywhere. She recently served as director of the Dominican University Storytelling Program. And we have Gay Ducey. She's a children's librarian, freelance storyteller, and storytelling educator. She's appeared on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and performs frequently throughout North America. She was commissioned by the Smithsonian Museum of American History to present Union Made, Stories from America's Women at Work. And Gay is also co-author of Spilled Milk, Traditional Tales of Mother and Motherhood. So Sandra and Gay, we're so very happy to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
The first question I always ask my guests is, what started you on this road to storytelling or your passion?
It's all Gay's fault.
Oh, okay.
I was teaching 8th grade.
And this is Sandra speaking.
Trying to impress 8th graders with the truth that history was relevant and very exciting. I saw a flyer that Gay had put out saying, Illuminating History Through Storytelling. I took the course, and it literally changed the direction I was going.
And so you were a teacher before this?
Absolutely.
Well, isn't that an interesting turn in the road?
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you get started, Gay?
I think I always did it. Mm. I've always told stories.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the South.
Mm-hmm. They are good storytellers.
We are good storytellers.
I learned to talk in the South, I know.
Oh, yeah. My family history is Southern Appalachian.
Okay.
The whole family. But I grew up in New Orleans. And the first good stories that you hear really are from your family.
I agree.
I think family tells us about itself by hearing stories. I think I just didn't know that there was a name for it. I didn't know until someone told me.
And really, that's how we define who we are often, is by the stories in our family in our early life. But then what was it about Gay's course, Sandra, that got you really moving on to more professional work as a storyteller?
Right. I believe what it was that a very large and mixed group of adults got together and each found a person or a moment in history to research and then to develop a through line.
Mm-hmm.
Who was I in this story? And in their presentations, we went from the web being formed to early California history. We roamed the world, and in each case, the heart was moved. So facts, historical facts.
So this is in the classroom when you brought storytelling back to the classroom.
Well, no, this was Gay's classroom.
But then you took it back to your schoolroom.
Absolutely, and what happened was the children, too,
mm-hmm.
found a way to make history relevant.
I see what you're saying.
And years later, I would come across a student on the street, and he'd say, well, remember when I was Thomas Edison? Well, I just read a... And they were still gathering information. So for me, it made history, and therefore
yes. history. History going forward for you.
The high story, right.
Yes. So, Gay, what then took you from your family storytelling into a setting that created more of a professional setting for you?
I changed careers midway, which is what any sensible woman should do.
At least I agree with you. What was your first career?
Social work administration.
Okay.
I worked with kids in abuse and neglect. Mm-hmm. And I changed careers, and I did so through a series of happenstance. And in the middle of trying to think about how I might do the next part of my life, I decided to go to library school at Cal. Mm-hmm. And I took a course because nothing else fit. I hadn't decided yet between two careers. And
you just knew something else was going to happen.
Well, I just had to muscle in one course to fill out a summer's requirement. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at my time, I could only fit one course, and it was in storytelling. And I was there for, four or five sessions, six sessions, and someone heard me tell a story in that class. And a couple of months later, she called and said, "Would you like to tell a story in our library?" And I said, "Well, sure."
Sure enough.
Sure. And another librarian was there, and she heard me tell a story. And in the meantime, I was going to graduate school in the next year in library science, but I never thought of storytelling as anything other than hopping into a local library, telling some stories I knew. Finally, maybe a year and a half, someone actually said to me, "I don't know if you know this, but we pay people to come here." I said, "No.
You pay?
You pay them to tell a story?" She said, "Yeah, I guess nobody wanted to really tell you that."
The big secret.
Well, the library always helping itself to balance an inadequate budget, you
see.
So I was the last to figure out that I was already doing it.
Well, isn't that wonderful? And then when you proceeded with your work after you left your school teaching situation, Sandra, where did it take you then?
I moved into teaching at Dominican myself, and then eventually became the director of the storytelling program there.
You moved up that storytelling ladder.
I did. Because I was an educator, that remained where I wanted to tell anyway. And I was very interested in finding and creating programs that linked up with what was already going on in the classrooms. So whether it was fifth grade geology or seventh grade astronomy, there were stories that would illuminate those subjects.
Oh, that's so wonderful. It's interesting, a quote here by Ann Watson says, "Stories tell us of what we already knew and forgot, and remind us of what we haven't yet imagined." And when I was a little girl, my brother and I got stories told to us at nighttime in our beds every night by our mother, and the story would continue from night to night to night, and we thought she was a miracle worker to keep track of what was happening in this story, and was she really making it up? And we were just fascinated, and it was probably the most warm family feeling I had growing up, because my father was busy as a physician and surgeon, and this was where family always happened, even if it didn't happen at the dinner table. And when we moved to another house, I was about in the fourth grade, Mother said she wasn't going to tell us stories anymore because we had different bedrooms and we were grown up enough now. And I was heartbroken. I cried. I really felt it was a loss that would never be regained, and that was true. That particular family moment never came back again. And so stories mean a lot to me. And in my playtime, Rose White and Rose Red and all the wonderful fairy tales I had as a child, I mean, these are great memories growing up, great memories. And this is what we're building. We're building stories that not only tell us about ourselves, but, other things that we might not learn in our hometown or in our family when we're reading, but to have someone actually say it out loud is such a different experience, isn't it?
It is a different experience. I think kids, particularly kids in families, have a constant need for stories. The kind of story your mother told you, where mm-hmm. she makes it up as she goes along, mm-hmm. but you never know until you're a much bigger guy. We call that the desperate mother story, actually.
Okay,
it's the end of a long day. Mom's thinking, ay, ay, ay.
Here we go again.
And the kids keep track of the plot, and some of the problems come when she forgets occasionally and reintroduces a character who died long ago.
There you go.
And the kids are very quick to tell you what the narrative thread is.
Sure.
Which means they're retaining it right away.
Absolutely.
Even as you're making it up as a parent, just immediately, right then.
Well, that's an important thing for us all to remember. And in the audience, I'm wondering if the subject of storytelling comes into your conversations as a family around the dinner table, or do you even think that a story might be the thing that helps a teenager out of a situation rather than a direct comment, for instance? I think that by example, we can communicate a lot more interesting information than saying, I noticed that you did this and Susie did that, and maybe you should do it differently. That's just so direct, and that becomes combative at a certain point, I think, in children's lives. So it's really an art to know which story to tell when, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think that the adolescents with whom I work, and they're always putting a hand on the hip and saying, well, don't you have a story about that, Sandra?
And I bet you do.
Right. But we deliberately every night begin our meal together with the question of the day.
Oh, that's always good.
That will be then often a story that develops as it goes around the table.
Well, I think that's one of the most important things we can mention today, is that questions actually are the stimulation for stories in cultures as we go along. In other words, to answer the questions of our lives, the elders in American Indian tribes often told stories to be teaching at the next level because that's the way it could happen, but the situation creates the story. And so if we didn't have a question, we wouldn't have as many stories. And I love questions. Of course, I love asking them. So we will come back. I want to ask everyone, when we talk about myths, fables, fairy tales, and anecdotes, what's the difference? Are they all part of storytelling? Well, our guests can give us an answer, so don't go away.
Ready for more? Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment on Green 960 KKGN. You found it, and it's different. The Joan Kenley Show, right here on Green 960 AM, KKGN.
Welcome back. I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to The Joan Kenley Show. Today, we're having a great time talking about storytelling, and we have Gay Ducey, who's a children's librarian, freelance storyteller, and storytelling educator, and Sandra Noman, a teacher, writer, and lively teller of tales. You know, the Aborigines in Australia said that the big stories, the ones worth telling and retelling, are the ones in which you may find the meaning of your life. And I think each and every one of us can recall stories that touched us and indeed have added meaning to our lives. I find it's interesting to know that within the storytelling community, a story is generally agreed to have specific narrative structure with a specific style and set of characters that includes a sense of completeness. Very interesting to know. And when you think about it, stories usually pass along beliefs and values. They also explain how things are, why they are, and our role and our purpose. Stories are the building blocks of knowledge and the foundation of both memory and learning. They connect us with our humanness. They contribute to our collective wisdom, and they link past, present, and future by teaching us the possible consequences of the various choices that we can make in our lives. You could say stories are the backbone of cultural survival. In the last segment, I did say we'd be talking about the difference between myth, fable, fairy tale, and anecdote, so I'd love to have you tell us about that.
This is an interesting thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. We use words in the vernacular, and we don't really know what they mean.
I agree.
So when you say someone is the legendary Marilyn Monroe,
right?
You say what he said was really a myth. What we actually mean when we say that is it wasn't true. It was a myth.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't correspond to what truly is traditional literature. Let's start with myth. Myth is always sacred, including our Bible. So you might say that the Bible was a myth as well, in the sacred and true and centered sense of that word. So when we tell myths as storytellers, we tell them knowing that at some time in history, these stories were sacred to some community, and we tell them with the kind of respect that they deserve. Different from legends, the sort of classic definition of a legend is an event, a place, or a person that is true, there's some kernel of truth in there, and around it has grown an elaborated version. So, for instance, when we talk about Pecos Bill.
Talk about who?
Pecos Bill, who's one of the legendary figures in the West.
I didn't know Pecos Bill was a legendary figure, so I'm learning something right this minute.
Well, he was, and kids study that usually around the end of elementary school. They study mythic figures of that kind, but they're really legendary figures. Uh-huh. He didn't probably do all the things that we think he did, just like there aren't all those appearances of Elvis that we really think he's here.
And he's really left the building.
Yeah, well, he really has left the building.
Yes, he has.
But there are lots and lots of people who believe the stories that get told about figures.
Or like by Buffalo Bill or
yes,
those folks.
Yes. What's interesting about legends is they usually illustrate the kind of values, if it's a figure, a legendary figure, that we hold close. Or if it's an urban legend, so-called. You know the one about the woman who goes to lunch? She's there late for lunch and she has a little poodle and she wants to be sure to get there in time and she's shampooed him, but he's not quite dry, so she pops him in the microwave.
Oh, that awful story.
And pop goes the weasel.
Exactly. Or the poodle.
Well, that's an urban legend.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the reason those get told is because we're uneasy about something.
As a culture, for instance,
we're uneasy about technology and
things
like that. And so we tell those stories so that we can test out and think about what they mean and what we're uncomfortable with. Mm-hmm. Those are different from folktales. Folktales are those stories which are transmitted orally.
Mm-hmm.
They are transmitted within a culture. They are timeless, but they are also culturally specific,
mm-hmm.
always.
Mm-hmm.
And fairy tales are a kind of folktale, you might say. And the clue is in the word. A lot of little guys jump around in those stories.
Aren't there, though?
Fairy tales are about transformation.
Well, that is really needed.
We need that
transformation kind of, I don't know, inspiration in order to move forward in life that sometimes feels hard and straight and narrow, you know.
Well, think of the ones you liked as a child and acted out.
Oh, sure.
You acted out fairy tales.
Oh, you bet.
Where there were transforming moments, especially for young women in those stories.
For sure. And
yeah.
Then what about fables? How are they different?
Oh, well, fables usually, not always, but usually animals stand in for people in fables.
Mm.
So they're anthropomorphized animals who are doing things which we can look at and comment upon. The great fabulist, who was Aesop,
sure,
among many others.
Sure.
Aesop told those stories, or so we believe, because he's a legendary figure.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Weaving.
Yes. He told them, but they're really not for children. We think of them as children's stories, but they're not prescriptive. They don't teach us what we should do. And there were never any morals at the bottom, which is interesting to know.
It's very, very good to know that.
Well, that was a Victorian.
It was
edition.
Victorian. Yeah. Yes, they added that because they thought the lower classes were not bright enough to dope it out.
So they added that to fables that didn't have them in the past?
Yes.
They added, and the moral is.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, well. How about that? And then what's an anecdote in relationship to these other definitions?
An anecdote is an egg that hasn't hatched yet.
Oh, tell me
for
more.
A story.
Okay.
An anecdote, when you find yourself telling an anecdote of your own experience, let's say, mm-hmm. and you tell it again and again and again and again and again and again, it's a story in the making, but it's not born yet. That's one of the reasons we tell things over and over.
So that the story can grow.
Yeah, it can become a story.
And more colorful and have more parts to it and so
forth. Or more meaningful.
Well, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, I think the search for meaning in our culture today is why many people are interested in stories. I mean, when I'm giving speeches, I know for a fact that if I meet these people 5 years later, it's the story and the stories that they're going to remember, not the philosophical mm-hmm. parts of the speech that I must give as part of the fee that I'm getting to give the speech. But the point is, you can stay on subject, but as long as the subject is interwoven with good stories that make a good example of what needs to be remembered, that's the way to go.
I think Sandra's work is an example, probably, of the time when one finds anecdotes all the time in one's work. All the time.
Well, give us an example, Sandra.
Well, what was occurring to me, what was passing through my mind as Gay was speaking, was that there was an urban legend in the making just last week. the children were passing, it had begun maybe a month ago, a story about someone on the bus who was a lecher, and he was going to get you and drag you off the bus.
Oh, no.
And over time, first it was a very vague description, but then it got clearer and clearer until they were practically ready to do the poster and put warnings up
forth. No.
And I thought, this is just amazing, because they're all adding something to it, and then they agree on the addition without being conscious how much they're just
so it grows like a snowball.
It does indeed.
And then it becomes a fact.
Yes, absolutely.
Or at least for a while, until it's disproved somewhere along the line. But this is how, you know, we can see in many movies how stories are told and then they're believed and believed and believed. But movies are different from storytelling, and we want to give examples of that too and talk about how radio is involved with storytelling more than television is, of course. And so one little quote to finish up, it says, "If stories come to you, care for them and learn to give them away where they are needed. Sometimes a person needs a story more than food to stay alive." So, Sandra, when you're working with children who are homeless and know about hunger and know about stories, you probably see this all the time, that people really need to connect with something other than their situation.
I think that stories play many roles with the children in my program. I think of them as being story starved.
That's a great way
to
put it.
They do not know some of the basic fables. If I use the expression, "Oh, that's sour grapes," or "He's just crying wolf."
Oh, they don't
There's
know.
There's no story behind that. So, first of all, it's almost like one has to back up and be that mother on the side of the bed telling those stories. I refuse to let them play music when I'm driving because I can't stand the music. Mm-hmm. It just drives me crazy. And I say, forget it, no music, I'll tell you a story.
Then they're willing.
They're willing, sometimes reluctantly, but they'll let me do it.
They don't want to hurt your feelings after all.
They don't know. Well, usually not.
Usually not.
I also will on specific occasions tell stories. So it's Halloween or it's Mother's Day or something like this. And then, like I say, around the dinner table, that the question will often elicit story. Sometimes stories are used, as you said, instead of saying, "Well, you should have."
Mm-hmm.
For example, I have one girl who was chasing a boy around. And there's not supposed to be any running in the schoolhouse, but every time I turned around, she was running and running. And I said, "Oh, you're just like Atalanta, the Greek."
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So then she puts the hand on the hip and she listens as I tell her who Atalanta was.
And tell us.
It's too long a tale.
Just a little bit.
Atalanta runs so swiftly that she goes on board the Argos and sails off with Jason in search of the Golden Fleece. And her biological father hears about her racing and asks her to come back to the palace. He had cast her off as an infant.
How awful.
And when she's back in the palace, he wants her to marry.
Okay.
So in the course of that, she eventually is in a race. And in that race, she comes to understand certain things.
And so you were giving this analogy to this girl chasing the boy.
And then she said, "So Sandra, you want me to eat more apples? Is that what you're telling me?"
That's
I said, "No." She said, "Well, what are you trying to tell me?" I said, "Well," she said, "I know, I could be working on the friendship and the respect." And I said, "Yes." I said, "But darling, you don't need to worry about the passion. You've definitely
got
the passion."
Great, wonderful story. Do you know, everyone out there, how important nursery rhymes are for children? Or how library programs and story hours can benefit your kids. Gay's got some intriguing tidbits to share with you, so stay around. You won't want to miss a minute.
invite your friends and family to listen to The Joan Kenley Show online or here on 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5. The Joan Kenley Show, talk radio your way on 960 KKGN.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, and you're back with The Joan Kenley Show. We're having such a great time with Sandra and Gay. They're making us laugh and helping us learn, too, because there's so much to know about storytelling. Sandra Noman is a teacher and writer, and Gay's a children's librarian, freelance storyteller, and educator. I just can't wait to hear what you both have to say next about storytelling in libraries, the preschool story hours, benefits for toddlers hearing nursery rhymes. Well, let's just have it all.
Oh, good. This is my favorite part.
Good.
Almost. I'm a children's librarian, so the marriage between words, children, stories, and libraries exactly mirrors my two professions. Years and years ago, lots of my friends who were storytellers left their jobs, their day jobs, went on the road full-time as artists, but I have never done that. I will never leave the library.
That's a great commitment.
Well, it is, and a resource for me as well, an enrichment and a refreshment for me as an artist. I can go on the road and tell stories, but when I return, the kids don't care where I've been. I'm their librarian first, and that's the kind of community grounding that a good library should have within the community. A little kid came in recently, about 7, 8 years old, and I've known him since before he was born, last summer. He came in with his grandparents, who are from distant shores, New Jersey.
Oh, yes.
And he came in and he said to his grandparents, "This is the Republic of Library."
Oh.
This is the Republic of Library. Well, I like that.
That's great.
I like the idea that there would be a Republic of Library.
I think we should make that official.
I think so, too. And I think it should be its own principality and fully funded, I might add.
And fully funded.
Fully funded and cherished. And he came over and he said to his grandparents, he said, "I can talk to her. She's my librarian." And he said, "Don't worry. They know me here." At 7 years old.
So important, yes.
Very important. The reason that libraries are such an important resource for parents is because this is the place where connecting babies and toddlers and young people to words and books is a mandate and a mission and a passion. I think in this entire thing, I haven't mentioned the word grandchild, which I think shows, in my case, the kind of restraint that keeps the president's hand off the button, because it's taken me all this time not to say the word grandchild. I'm blessed with two granddaughters, and when the first one was born, she's now almost 4. When she was born, I called her, even though she lives 15 minutes away, I called her every day. When she could hold the phone, I would call her. Because I didn't see her every day.
No, you didn't.
And there isn't much to say, because on the other end, there's nothing but heavy breathing.
Right.
You know, they just breathe a lot.
Oh, sure.
So I thought, what will we do now, I wonder? Mm-hmm. So I started telling her reciting a new nursery rhyme every day to this child.
How inventive.
Desperate grandparent.
There you go.
And then she'd hang up the phone.
Just like that?
Yeah. And then she'd wave at it. And eventually, I ran out of nursery rhymes almost, although there are hundreds and hundreds, and she began to say them back to me without being asked, without being told.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So one day I was picking up her little toes to put a sock on, and she said, that's a shoe. I said, "Yes, that's a shoe." And she said all on her own, "Diddle, diddle, dumpling, my son John went to bed with his breeches on. One shoe off, one shoe on. Diddle, diddle, dumpling, my son John."
Bravo.
She was 2 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
I've never told her about stories, particularly. I've just told her things. Mm. One day, about 3 years old, she said, "Mama," which is what she calls me, very Southern.
Mm-hmm. Sure it is.
Her mother is Mommy and I'm Mama. She said, "Mama, I have a story to tell." I said, "What is it?" She said, "Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of noodles. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Mary had a lamb." I thought it was a pretty darn good story.
Myself.
So that child, it is kind of funny, that child had heard those rhymes on her own with no prompting, had taken a rhyme, another rhyme, something she loves to eat, put them all together to make a new story.
So precious.
Precious and important.
Yes, very important.
Because she internalized the whole idea of story. Mm-hmm. Kids who hear stories in their ears make better, faster readers without a doubt. They already know what plot is. They know what character is. When parents come into the library, we say, and they say, we want to have good readers. We want to make a good reader. Here's what I say. I say, if you want to make a good reader, of course, you need to be one.
Yes.
You need to model reading, certainly. But also you need to fill this child's life with rhyme and rhythm and chant, with nursery rhymes and songs before she even knows what they are or what's happening. Our children, Sandra said, the kids she is privileged to serve are story starved. Our children are language starved.
They are language
starved. Yes, they are.
And in fact, when I hear the monosyllabic answers that hear, I'm just amazed because my parents always talk to me in adult vocabulary. And so I had adult vocabulary
yes,
from the beginning.
Did.
But I think that's something that's missing today.
It is missing. And you know, it's a funny thing. We've chosen genetically and maybe for what, 5-6 million years? We've chosen in an evolutionary manner words as the way we communicate. That's what we've chosen. Mm-hmm. It's how we communicate. If we don't have them, we can't communicate complex, nuanced, subtle ranges of ideas and opinions. Without language, without vocabulary, without words, interesting words, kids can't fully express. Yeah. So giving kids language in every form we can give it to them, and not drumming it into them, but giving it to them in conversation like your parents did.
Oh, yes. And in fact, one of the highest compliments I can have with my son Roland is if he actually paraphrases or says a phrase that I say in certain circumstances, and then I think, he was really listening.
He was listening. Yes. Yeah, he has that language. Without that, kids are limited. Their speech is limited. And one of the things that I grew up with, as you did, in the South, South's a very, very important region in terms of language and narrative. We prize language, and we prize being able to speak eloquently. I learned that words have interesting histories and lives of their own, and I learned to use them.
I think you certainly have learned to use them.
Well, my mother would be happy to hear that. So the library's job is to make sure that those resources still exist and that kids, without a screen in front of them, without a machine in their hands, without other people's ideas and images, that kids have opportunities to hear rhythm, chant, rhyme, and language before they even need it, they already have it.
Well, I think what you just said about rhythm, chant, and rhyme, many people who've come to me for voice training, they want to have the same rhythm in their speech, and they want to have the same meter, and they don't want to get louder or softer. They just want to get a voice that goes on. And I'm amazed that that isn't part of their upbringing, that there
yes,
is that sense of tempo, and of course nursery rhymes give you that chance to do that. I mean, you have some nursery rhymes, Sandra, that you have told us about in the break. Do you have a couple you'd like to share with us?
Wee Willy Winky runs through the town, upstairs and downstairs, in his nightgown, knocking on the windows, crying through the doors, all the children in bed.
Now it's 9 o'clock.
Nine is now 9 o'clock. That's like the bowl of noodles I certainly didn't buy. Upstairs and downstairs. Well, anyway, I always picture Wee Willy Winky running up and down those stairs.
And all around the town?
Always. Yeah,
all around the
poor
town.
Poor baby.
But how have you incorporated nursery rhymes in your work?
I don't really do that.
But you know them.
Yes, I do know them, but I know them really not from my own childhood. I know them from being a mother and then a grandmother.
Okay.
There's, in different languages, there are better ways to capture an event.
Definitely.
You know, there's no better word than gemütlich for cozy. I mean,
yes.
That it's more than cozy. It's actually the fire in the hearth and mm-hmm. the candles flickering just so. It's a very particular smell in the room even.
Right. And you said when you were gathering stories everywhere that there are stories with pathos and triumph and light and shadow. And there's the academic, the social, the physical, emotional. So there's all kinds of ways, all kinds of lenses to come into a story.
Right.
And I think that's what we need to know too. It isn't just a story, but it's something that is lit in our heart to say, oh, I think I want to talk about that, or that inspires me to tell you. It's not just what I did today, but how can I make a story about what I did today that will be part of our lives together because I told it to you. So we've just loved hearing everything in this segment, and we just are thirsting for one more story after one more story. Well, how about you in the audience? Would you like to tell great stories? Sandra and Gay know just what you can do. Our next segment is filled with fascinating ideas and more great stories, so stay tuned.
Dr. Joan Kenley, taking talk radio to the next level on Green 960 AM, KKGN. Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway, brings you Conversation Radio here on Green 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, continuing with you today on The Joan Kenley Show. Two great storytellers are with us, Sandra Noman and Gay Ducey, who both serve as storytellers and educators for children, the community, and their associations. And so welcome back, and we want to know more. We want to know that the tale is often wiser than the teller, and we want to know about thou shalt not is soon forgotten, but once upon a time lasts forever. So here we are. Let's go on and tell us a little more about Julia Morgan, I believe, Gay.
There are lots of places for folks to hear storytelling, but also lots of places for folks to tell stories, mm-hmm. which is really more important in some ways. Well, maybe they're partnered. I think it's the 20th year. Monterey Public Library has a storytelling series for adult audiences only. Kids. They're not for little kids. It's for older kids and adults. It's free, although you have to get a ticket and make a reservation because they sell out every single series every single year.
Oh, that's so inspiring.
Oh, it's marvelous. Open to the public. They get nationally and internationally recognized storytellers to come in just for the evening to tell stories. In the Bay Area, where I live, there's a Julia Morgan Theater, and they too have a series of storytelling events for adults, a series of concerts, and it's open to the degree that you can just walk in, pay your money, and sit down. Although it costs, it's also open in the sense that there are lots of styles, lots of tellers. Every month there's a different experience for you to have.
Oh,
lots of places to go.
Sounds like we should take a trip to Monterey.
I think so.
And don't forget swaps.
Yes.
Swaps are
very important.
A swap is an informal group that cobbles itself together.
Anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Usually once a month, and forms a group, and you can go, you can listen to stories, you don't have to, you can tell stories, you don't have to, and you just have the experience of people telling and listening informally just for the pure love of the craft.
Oh.
Welcome and open to anyone.
Well, that creates community, and that's what many people in many neighborhoods feel a lack of. And I know in our own neighborhood, it's been 5 years since we've had a neighborhood party, and we're going to see that there's one this summer, but we do need community in our lives. It's so important, and that's why women are forming women's circles, and that's why people are going back to religious organizations mm-hmm. to be in community and in conversation. And of course, there's storytellers everywhere,
mm-hmm.
aren't there?
On every block.
Yes, and so just what makes a great story? I mean, what are the ingredients, do you think?
Well, I'll try that. Clear beginning, middle, and end.
That's Sandra telling us. Okay.
Not too many subplots or flashbacks or complications to the plot. It has to be pretty straightforward. There have to be very dynamic characters. The characters have to come alive with enough detail that they can be pictured, but not so much detail that you as a listener are not allowed to paint in the final nose shape.
Right, right.
There also need to be variations of tempo, mm-hmm. I believe.
Which we've talked about.
To some degree, and there need to be it needs to be relevant. It needs to be a story that people are going to care about. If you're going to go into personal telling, which I admit I do, mm-hmm. The biggest question comes from Stephen Henniger, a friend and one of the people at the Bay Area Storytelling Festival. He says, well, you have to say, who gives a damn?
Oh, well, that's a great way to shape it.
Right.
You have
In other
to
words,
give
it
damn.
Has to be a universal enough story that
sure.
if it's your personal tale, it's not simply your own stuff.
Right.
It has to be something that people can identify with.
So other ingredients, what would you say, Gay, make a great story?
Make a good story?
Mm-hmm.
I actually think Sandra did a good job of, and that's not an accident because she is a fine teacher of storytelling, of giving the outlines and the important aspects of a story. I'd only add a couple of things, and they're not really additions. A good traditional tale, in particular, mirrors what we think of as good fiction. There needs to be a protagonist, mm-hmm. usually the guy, no gender intended, with whom we identify. There needs to be a conflict of some kind that challenges that character. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's an antagonist who's ready to throw stones and cudgels in the way. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a way to solve or to resolve that conflict. And from that resolution, the story descends to a satisfying conclusion. Notice that we don't say a happy ending, nor do we say it all comes out right exactly. It needs to be a satisfying ending, not necessarily a happy ending.
I wouldn't have thought of that way. So satisfying is a very different kind of word than happy, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
So it's like a completion. It's carried home.
Yes, it's a logical. When the listener hears it, you may not be happy with the mm-hmm, ending, mm-hmm. but you know that it's a reasonable resolution. It has resolved as it should have. And folktales tell us that we know that's true. We know that although it's not so popular in modern times, we know that wolf that goes after Granny, he needs to be dispatched from this earth. He's a danger to the community. He's a dangerous creature in the community. When kids hear a story where the wolf sits down for crumpets afterward,
uh-oh.
Kids are very, very confused.
Of course.
They require fairness and justice and sometimes revenge. They do, and they know. Mm. So that ending may not be one that a parent is comfortable with, but kids know the difference, and it's a satisfying ending.
Well, if somebody in our audience says, gee, I'm so fascinated by everything we've heard, what can we do to learn to be a good storyteller, and what kinds of courses are given and how long are they for? And if someone hasn't done any kind of storytelling and wants to be part of a community of storytellers, what do they go through? I mean, what's the first step, to look in the Yellow Pages or go on the internet to your address and find a place to go?
Well, the first thing to do, and that's the easy part. First thing to do in the Bay Area, we have an organization called SAC, the Storytelling Association of Alta California.
You have to say that more slowly for me to
storytelling,
understand.
Well, me too, actually.
Okay.
The Storytelling Association of Alta, ALTA, California. Everything above Baja.
Okay.
You might say. And if you go to the web and put that in, you will get a series of links which will give you opportunities to join a local story swapping group. You can slip in and start telling stories that day.
Whoa.
Yes, you can, just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the really important part. Storytelling it's a folk art.
Mm-hmm.
It means it's for folks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that our storytellers in our families, the ones, your mom, who kept you and the kids entertained for hours at bedtime, mm-hmm. I don't think she was taking any storytelling workshops.
No, I don't think she was either.
I think she was a pretty darn good storyteller.
Right.
And she kept you well acquainted with a good story. So we have already what we need to tell stories.
But who can remind us of what we have in us? Maybe that's the question.
I think so. Well, I think first we need to tell. Mm-hmm. Tell as best we can, whenever we can. And then if we hunger for a little more, mm-hmm. a little more experience, a little more support, then I think we start looking for educational opportunities. You can also do that fairly easily through the National Storytelling Network. In the Bay Area, you can take classes at San Jose State, you can take them at San Francisco State, and storytellers come through with some regularity who offer workshops.
And so that's probably for the community as well as for the students.
Oh, it's specifically for the community.
That's what I would imagine, yeah.
And I think this is a little like cooking. Maybe we're not going to turn out to have our own cooking show like, you know, whatever that woman's
Julia.
Name is. Yeah, well, yeah, my
child.
Favorite, Julia.
Yes.
Child. But I notice it's about time for dinner and we're going to sling some hash and our families are going to like it. So you can enter storytelling and invest in storytelling on any level that is comfortable for you. You can spend a lifetime and make it a profession, mm-hmm. or you can decide that you want to entertain and instruct the kids mm-hmm. beautifully at nighttime like your mom.
Well, interesting, because our storytellers that consider themselves professional, do they get paid?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, they do.
So that is something to aspire to as a career, for instance, if someone is so inspired.
You might like to. You might wish to. But in our community, there is no difference in excellence necessarily between a professional teller and someone who is a community teller. Right. Telling stories for fun and on occasion.
And did you have a tiny little story you wanted to tell us?
Well, I think it will be tiny indeed. So I think what I'd like to do instead is to end with a couple of ways that stories traditionally end.
Oh, okay.
But not in our culture.
Okay.
You know what ours is, right? Happily
ever after.
Big American idea. But in Ireland, here's one. And so they lived well. And why would they not? And if they didn't, what business is it of yours? In Scandinavia, very often they say, snip, snap, snout, this tale's told out.
That's so good.
And my favorite, which is Middle Eastern, is when the story ends, is, and so does our story end. If the tale be sweet, bless the tale. If the tale be bitter, blame the teller.
That's just grand. Well, this has been a wonderful hour with both of you. Thank you so very much for being here. I'd like to say to everyone tuned in, thanks so much for listening. We want you to know that The Joan Kenley Show brings you Conversation Radio, co-created for your listening pleasure with our guests. You can find out more about the whole subject of storytelling on my website, joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y, where all of our shows are archived and downloadable 24/7. Tune in next week for a great program honoring the International Day of Peace, celebrated annually around the globe on September 21st. Our country truly feels the pain of war and wants peace more than ever right now. And it's clear that this worldwide Peace Day is about creating peace every day, all year long, and in the years to come. The co-founder of Pathways to Peace, Avon Madison, will be one of our very special studio guests, along with Charles Gibbs, director of the United Religions Initiative, and Masanko Banda from You Can Dance and the Peacebuilding Institute. We'll also have many prominent peace leaders from coast to coast calling in to offer their ideas and inspiration about inner peace and peace among nations. I believe the commitment to peace can be very personal, following the idea of let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. Did you ever wonder if a personal commitment to daily peaceful thoughts and behavior for yourself, your family, and your neighbors could affect change in the world? Well, we certainly do here. And what could you do each day to dedicate yourself to the practice of peace? We'll talk about all of this next week. I'd like to add that our radio show is a special project of Pathways to Peace, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting peace on the planet. Please don't miss this important program. Huge thanks go to those who made this show possible, Peter B. Collins and Christy Healy, and here in the studio, program producer Tiffany Chalice,
engineer and technical producer Carson Day, and Sarah Durbin, production assistant. This is Joan Kenley inviting you to tune into our show for more Conversation Radio every Saturday at 5 on Green 960.